This is The Record. I'm Marcy Silman. Recognize that? It's actually the AT&T jingle. Joel Beckerman composed it. Beckerman has spent most of his life writing the soundtracks of our lives. He's worked on film scores and sonic branding for AT&T and companies like Disney. In his new book, The Sonic Boom, Joel Beckerman explains why he thinks sound is one of the most powerful human senses.
There are so many experiences we have that are both sound and sight and smell, and really because we experience sound first, it's the sense that ties it all together. And in addition to that, sound does tremendous, amazing things with our brain, that it actually triggers these very old parts of our brain. And you can see this on fMRI scans, where really the whole brain lights up. You see this amazing amount of brain activity just from a simple piece of music or a simple sound. And that's because there's so much of the brain that's involved. It triggers these powerful emotions in an instant. It triggers these memories that, you know, you can think about listening to your prom song. You know, you hear your prom song after a lot of years. Automatically, you sort of get transported back through time and space, and you're right there. And you can sort of remember what it was like to be there, and you remember the people you were with. It's incredibly quick and evocative and powerful and emotionally connective sense.
I know that you started off in all of this, like the rest of us, as, you know, just a regular person, not a sonic brander and a sound specialist. I'm curious, when you first came to realize what sound or music could do.
There were a number of different experiences, probably the two most powerful ones. One was, I remember being in an assembly at school and hearing somebody play gospel piano, and just, it was a sound that just filled the entire room, and I remember just being transported by it. And I said, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to learn how to play piano and do that. And then there was another experience that I had with my brother, which was, you know, I wanted to show him that I was brave. So we were watching a television program we shouldn't have been watching, which was in the old days of HBO. They were playing The Exorcist on television. And we're sitting there, and I was way too young. I was probably 11 years old. My brother was probably 9, or I might even be a little bit younger. And what I did to be able to get through that experience with him was I turned the sound down. And we had one of those old portable air-powered organs in the basement. And so as the scary scenes came up, I just made the organ really loud, and I played all sorts of tunes and melodies and stuff, and it was just, it became like a joke. All of this experience I've had with sound and music and in television and in brands and all these things that I've done in my career really led to this desire to write the book, The Sonic Boom, which is really about taking all those experiences and helping people be able to apply that knowledge in their lives. So when you think about essentially pulling back the curtain and realizing that every single moment of our lives is scored by sound and music, whether or not we realize that, it's always there. It's guiding our choices. It's changing our mood in an instant.
Is silence ever as powerful as sound?
Silence actually can be more powerful than sound. So think about just the soundscape of our lives right now. The problem is not that there's not enough sound in the world. We're actually completely overrun by sound. And often sound and experience can be much more powerful for us, in part because it's in disuse, but in part, think about any kind of work of art or any kind of topography or visual art form, that the negative space is just as important as the positive space and sometimes more important. So those moments that we have silence are incredibly important. But here's one thing that I hate to tell you, there really is no such thing as silence. What we're really talking about is perceived silence, because if you go to a place that really is silent, and those places on Earth are basically called anechoic chambers, they're created for research work. And if you go into an anechoic chamber where there really truly is silence, it's actually incredibly disturbing for people, because now, you know, we're so used to straining to hear all the sounds in our world, whether we're realizing it or not, that what happens is when you can't hear any sound outside of yourself, what you start hearing is the sound of you. You hear gastric noises. You hear your blood running through your veins. You start to hear a high-pitched whine, which is actually your brain activity. So people can only last maybe about 20 minutes or so before they want to run out of the door pretty quickly. So what we're really talking about is this perception of silence. And in terms of brands that do a great job with perception of silence, think about going to theme parks. Disney is actually amazing at this with perceived silence. So when you go from one land, let's say you go from Frontierland to Tomorrowland, it really wouldn't do at all if you're in Frontierland and you hear the roller coaster from Tomorrowland across the way. So what they'll do is they'll strategically put water features so that the sound of the rushing water prevents you from hearing something outside of that land. Or they'll pipe in fake bird sounds. There's no birds in the trees. There may be birds there, but they're not making that kind of sound. And that actually also prevents you from hearing the airplanes overhead. So they really control that whole sonic experience to make sure that the magic doesn't go away.
Now, Joel, I have worked in radio for about 30 years, more than 30 years at this point. And one of the things I have found most interesting in listening not just to radio stories, but to environments, is that it seems like a lot of people, when you tell them you need to have some sort of sonic environment, they put too much sound or inappropriate, the wrong music, just for music's sake. So when you're working with people that hire you to make a great aural experience, how do you explain, you know, that maybe throwing in the kitchen sink's not the right thing?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a few things that we do. First of all, we always say to people, look, I'm a music lover. I love pure musical experiences that are designed just for musical experiences. But when we're essentially scoring these experiences, which is what we're talking about here, it's scoring the soundtrack of a particular experience or scoring the soundtrack of our life. In those cases, it's really not about the music and sound. It's about the experience that we're creating for people. So what we spend a lot of time and effort and energy with people is to develop strategies, how to create soundtracks that are consistent, not just consistent, but really evocative of the experiences you're trying to create for people, how you can use sound to actually give people information moment to moment in an experience. You think about all of how brands now exist across such a multitude of platforms and places that you come in contact with brands. You think about how brands show up in sponsorships in spaces like stadiums. You know, we're working on an entire score for the fan experience for the Dallas Cowboys for AT&T. And again, if we were just in there, like you were saying, just kind of pumping in music willy-nilly, just because, hey, we like this piece of music, we'll throw it in, it actually would distract the football game. It would distract the fan experience. So we always have to remember that it's got to be about, not about the music, but that experience we're creating.
What do you think of as your best work that you've ever done?
Wow, that's tough. I always like to think that the best work I've ever done is the work yet to come. I'm always looking to sort of stretch and go some other place I haven't gone. But I think the opportunities right now, I've spent so much of my career working in television, creating music for news and for sports and for documentary television. And I've worked now with brands and a lot of things. You know, I used to do some work in the advertising area. But to me, the most interesting places, the places where sound can make the biggest difference, really now are in spaces and they're in devices. And you think about in the future as we're moving toward the Internet of Things, imagine that all these places you have to use the Internet now, a tabletop or wall, whatever it is, there's not going to be screens. So in those areas where there's no screens, what's the perfect human interface? How can these devices help you, give you information when you need it, be able to allow you to interact with it? And to me, that's all about sound. So to me, it's now not just scoring television shows, but it's scoring the world in ways that really benefit people, that enhance their experience.
What do you listen to when you go home?
Well, I'm a bit of a variety junkie. So there are sometimes I'll be listening to Gregorian chants, and there are sometimes I'll be listening to proto-punk records, and sometimes I'm listening to I actually am a big fan of public radio, so I do a lot of listening to different sounds coming around the world through public radio. So I'm a huge variety junkie.
That's Joel Beckerman, sound designer and sonic brander. His new book is called The Sonic Boom.